This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Pisgah Legal Services has been representing clients in eviction court for more than 40 years, and recently they noticed an uptick in the number of residents seeking their services in Buncombe County. It presented this question: if the economy in Asheville is booming and unemployment is historically low, why are there so many in the community unable to afford rent? Robin Merrill is managing attorney at Pisgah Legal. She joins us from Blue Ridge Public Radio in Asheville. Hello, Robin.
Hi, Frank.
Tell us what you know about evictions in Buncombe County.
Well, we know that they steadily remain around 2,200 per year for the last several years and are on track to be a little higher than that this year.
And the fact that they are holding steady is presents a quiz only because the economy really has been improving, at least in Asheville, and that has a lot to do with Buncombe County's economy. What do you think is happening?
Well, I wish that a booming economy was the only factor that impacted evictions, but it's not. Overall, we have a tremendously low supply of housing that is affordable. We have a large gap between wages and rents. For example, our clients at Pisgah Legal Services have an annual income averaging at just over $12,000, which means that they can afford rent and utilities just over $300 a month. But the average cost of a modest two-bedroom apartment, rent alone, not including utilities, is $829. Wow. That's a $500 gap.
At $800, you're close to $1,000, which is their average annual income, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So we have that tremendous affordability problem and then about a 1% vacancy rate amongst affordable housing units. So when families get displaced through eviction, there's just nowhere for them to go.
Yeah. So, and talk about what has changed, because as you say, the eviction rate is stubborn. It's not coming down at a time, again, when the general economy is improving. Housing stock seems to be the problem, the availability of affordable housing. But something that you've seen, which is more people coming to you and asking for help. Talk about that change.
Well, we knew that in 2016, when we took it upon ourselves to kind of look at how many evictions were being filed and what was happening with them, and we came to realize that it was about 2,200 cases, we knew that that many folks were not coming to us for assistance. So we decided to go to them, and we created the Tenant Emergency Response Program. And so now we have two staff attorneys and several volunteer attorneys who take shifts being at the courthouse when eviction cases are going on. And in talking to the folks, what we find is that given that they only have to have 48 hours notice to show up for eviction court, they don't have time to get to us. Because these are also folks who are trying to work, juggle school schedules, all the other just incidents of life. And it takes time to get an attorney, present your case. And many people think that as tenants, they don't even have the right to an attorney while they're in court.
Well, talk more about that. There's a couple of things I want to make sure we can sort through. First of all, you know, what are the rights of the tenant, how the negotiations might go. But first, talk about these timelines. Only 48 hours notice to come to court. What about the eviction process itself? I understand it's a pretty accelerated process here in North Carolina.
It can be an accelerated process. It's designed to happen in small claims court, and the landlord, when they go and file, are given a hearing date within 7 days. Then there's the requirement of the 48-hour notice to the tenant. Court happens. It can be difficult for a tenant to get a continuance or a delay. And then there's a decision. All of those decisions can be appealed to district court, which can mean a longer time frame, but people don't know about that right. And to really exercise that right, they have to pay their rent ongoing into the court, which can be financially difficult for a lot of people. So what we found in 2016 doing that research, that the average amount of time from filing to lockout for small claims cases was only 20 days.
Well, less than a month. So as you say, there's not much housing stock available. This is somebody who has less than a month to make this transition. So what happens? And as you say, you decided to plant yourself at the court. So as people came in, you could advise them of these rights. What kind of rights do they have, and how would the process change if they had legal representation?
They have the right to court process before being locked out. They have the right to represent themselves, to present evidence, and to question anyone testifying against them. They have the right that the landlord actually prove that they did not pay their rent or that they breached a condition of their lease. And they have the right to present defenses to that. There are a few legal defenses that are available within the law. They have the right to appeal that small claims decision to the district court. And that can be hard, and it's sort of a complicated process, I think a little too complicated, but it can give more time to the person who might need to move out.
And you talked about the fact that they could be evicted for non-payment of rent, but also for violating the lease. Do you know what percentage of tenants are evicted for simply not being able to pay?
In 2016, our data showed that 80% of the eviction filings were related to non-payment of rent.
All right. And so we talked about rights. Obviously, a landlord has a right. They have a right to be paid for the land that they own, for the property that they own. You go into some kind of negotiations often with the landlord, I understand. Talk about how that works and why the landlord would even participate in that.
So the landlord absolutely has the right to be paid. However, there are some statutory requirements related to how much a late fee they can charge, how frequently they can charge it, how much they can retain of a security deposit. And we find that some landlords know that and others don't. And so as a result, sometimes they charge more than they're actually allowed to. When we negotiate with landlords, it's typically a conversation where we're trying to lay out the likelihood of their success, any defenses that we may have. Frequently, tenants will have some of the money they owe, but not all of it. For many landlords, cash flow is a real issue. So sometimes just getting some money is an incentive enough for them to work with the tenant. Also, turning over units is a costly thing for landlords to do. So it's really better for everyone if the tenant can stay in that unit longer.
But I'm wondering about that in terms of that kind of leverage. If you could evict a tenant within a month, in the same month as you've issued your eviction notice, and there is this shortage of housing, I would think that the next potential tenant is lined up and ready to take that unit before the month is out.
They are. And usually more than one potential tenant, yeah. But 20, 30, more than that even. The waiting lists for subsidized housing or affordable housing programs here in Buncombe County are tremendously long, and sometimes waiting lists just get shut down because they get into the years of time that people can expect to access the housing.
What about the effects of gentrification? I mean, obviously this has an effect on the real estate market generally, and I don't know if it reaches into areas where there are lower rents and lower incomes. Have you been able to figure out what effect that might be having?
We're not aware of anyone keeping real statistics about that. We have anecdotes, and I think a good example that we've seen over time is the Montford community, which is where our office used to be located. And that had, after the sort of the Victorian era, it had become a neighborhood with many low-income rental units and lower-income home ownership. And now it's one of the great places to be in Asheville. There's been an influx of people moving in with cash who've renovated the old homes. The tax prices have gone up. The rents have gone up. And many of the lower income people have had to relocate out of Montford.
You know, it's interesting. You talk about the lack of affordable housing, right? And we saw in the 1980s in particular, that's when programs began to shrink, at least for subsidized housing. Those programs began to shrink dramatically. And of course, the housing stock then fell even more. But the mantra was, well, let the market provide. This is what we heard in the 1980s. And it hasn't done that, and it's been decades, and it's gotten nothing but worse. But I'm wondering why it doesn't. If there's a need for this kind of housing, why doesn't the market rush in and build it? You're laughing, and you should, but go ahead, continue.
I am laughing.
You should.
It's just been my experience that the market doesn't take care of the people at the lowest end, and that there's, with all of the people moving into Buncombe County, there's really no incentive for anyone to build affordable housing for the lower income folks, because they're having no trouble filling the housing that they build for the wealthier people.
And there are much higher margins.
Higher profit margins.
Yeah. Well, we've had 30 years of experience now in witnessing this. So hopefully someone will take note and things will turn around. But thank you for what you're doing. Robin Merrill, Managing Attorney at Pisgah Legal Services. Thank you, Robin.
Thank you.
That's Robin Merrill, as I said, Managing Attorney for Pisgah Legal Services. You can find out more at our website, stateofthings.org. Just ahead, what does it mean to be brown in the South? Three James Beard-nominated chefs share their stories on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us.